When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to More Than Amused Podcast, a podcast all about women and the arts, hosted by Stani and Sadie.
Join us as we explore what it's like being a female artist, examine modern day problems, and educate ourselves and you on important and forgotten female artists of the past.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to More Than Amused. I'm Stani.
And I'm Sadie. Thanks for joining us to learn more about women and women artists.
It's almost the end of August, right? How does that happen? These months have been flying by.
I know. This year is going by very quickly, actually. It's very freaking.
It really, truly is.
If it's your first time here joining us, or if you're new to the podcast, I just like to mention that we keep it more casual here, where every week we learn new things and then we share what we learn with you. We're not necessarily experts and art historians, but we love what we talk about and what we learn about. So we keep it more casual, a little bit more like a conversation, but I assure you that we do our research. And if there ever is a time, though, that we are wrong, please let us know. Because like I said, we're learning in real time a lot of the time about these women that we discover. And then, yeah, like we said, we just share this knowledge with you so that you can learn more about women in the arts.
Yes.
I like to give that disclaimer.
We consider it like, it's like a jumping off point. And we mentioned that a lot. They'd be like, okay, here's like a little bit about something and now you can go and learn more about it on your own. Because obviously,
exactly,
we aren't experts and we don't have the time to dive into all of the research required to like fully give you a thorough presentation on every single detail of each person. But we can give you the snippets for like an hour that'll give you like a good general idea. And I think that that's helpful.
Exactly. And today, I feel like especially I'm giving very bite-sized pieces of the people that I'm covering. Usually the format of the podcast is every other week, Stani and I find an artist of the month that we focus on, and then the other weeks we're focusing on topics. So this week is my artist pick, which ended up me kind of finding a category of artists, like six people that I'm going to briefly shout out, because I picked one artist and then I watched a documentary that that artist is featured in, and then I got an introduction to all of these women that I just wanted to shout out all of them very briefly. So again, this is going to be just the jumping off point for everyone, but I just felt like it was worth it to share.
Especially if they fit within a same category or field or a time period. We've done that before where, you know, like they fit so perfectly that you just throw them in together.
It just makes sense. And today we're talking about background singers, which is super fun because, I mean, personally, I am a singer. And so I love learning about other singers. And the documentary that I found is called 20 Feet from Stardom. And it's on HBO if anyone's interested in checking that out. It's a really great documentary. I would 100% recommend it. But how I was introduced to this documentary and this person, just period, is I work in a music school, and I was talking to a guitar instructor one day, and we were talking about the song Rolling Stones because a group, I think, was singing the song Gimme Shelter by Rolling Stones. He knows about the podcast that I do here. And so he was like, oh, do you know about Mary Clayton? I hadn't. And she is actually the woman who like does the iconic background vocals in that song. And so he told me, he's like, yeah, there's this woman. She's an incredible vocalist, and she's not necessarily credited as like a featured artist in that song, but she's such a crucial, cool part of that song. And so a lot of people don't know about her. And he was right. I did not know anything about her. And so then I went, you know, did a little bit of research on her and found out about this documentary, which I actually had heard about previously, but hadn't had the opportunity to watch it yet. And so watched the documentary and then learned about all these amazing other just like background vocalists who like the interesting thing about background singers is they're all the people and just not even background singers, but just the musicians that are generally in the band of these famous people is that you're never going to know their name. I mean, like musicians might know who like you know, like Michael Jackson's drummer, guitarist is, but like most people in the general public don't know these musicians at all. And yet they're so crucial to the music making and the performing. And so just in general, an underappreciated sector of the music industry, I think.
Can I ask you a question as a non-musician? So when you're recording a track in the studio, do you have background singers, or do people like record background vocals by themselves? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I would say yes and no. And that's actually something that the documentary touched on, where I think it was a lot more common by like 40, 50 years ago to hire background vocalists to come into the studio and record the parts.
Well, but they probably didn't have like layering tracks and stuff in the same way that we do now, right?
Yeah, and I'm sure a big part of that, yeah, is the technology that has just developed over time. But yeah, I'd say also too, even just like sonically and like just what the trend of what people like, and maybe even what the artist wants to do, it's become more popular just for the person to do the background vocals themselves. But also another thing is, like, I think because of home studios and things like that, it's streamlined the process, where it's like, if you can just record a bunch of vocal takes by yourself and just get it done more efficiently, you'll do that, as opposed to having to like book the studio time, hire the singers and have to pay them, and like set up a session where like an hour or two for just background vocal parts. Like, I don't think that's necessarily as common, because, and especially like for just like smaller artists like myself, it's like you don't have as much of a huge budget per se, and so you'll just do it yourself. But and then I think even like sonically in big pop tracks, it's, you know, maybe
I was
not
trying
as
to think, because I know she did it during quarantine, but Folklore and Evermore were just Taylor vocals, right? But then performing them at the Eras Tour, which you talked about a lot, she had her background singers. And I remember like thinking it was so cool to hear it live with all of the tracks, because I know that sometimes I've heard like multiple tracks on a song and then you hear it live and it's just the one because they did all of them.
Yeah.
And they don't have like a background singer. So yeah, that makes sense. I was just curious.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, it happens both, but I think the trend as of lately has been to just have the artists do it themselves. And like I said, the documentary actually touches on that, because like a lot of the singers bring up that they're not really getting as many calls anymore. And it's really hard to like make a living as a studio background singer. Or it still happens. Like a couple months ago, I had a friend out here in Nashville who's recording her EP, and she was like looking for background vocals. And so she asked me if I could like, you know, come in and help her with it. So I recorded some background vocals with her, but like she was, you know, in on the background vocals as well, because you can't really tell the nuances and voices and things like that. But
So,
it is kind
of interesting. That's true. That's so interesting. I wonder like what it's like for background singers out there right now, because unless you're going on tour.
I would say touring probably is probably, or like, I mean, at least like here in Nashville, like having to do like Broadway type like live gigs is like the main way that you'd make an income,
or like,
as opposed to studio work, maybe.
Yeah. Or like a residency, if you could like get in with an artist who's in one place for a long time. That's crazy, though. Like,
I know.
That's really interesting. Mm-hmm. I love seeing ways that like the music world has changed, because I feel like it's changed more dramatically than a lot of other art forms. Because of like technology and streaming and everything else, like it is an entirely new world and idea from like everything else that it used to be.
Totally. And I do also love shouting out like the background singers and also just like the musicians that are behind the scenes, because I think a lot of the times when like you tell people like, oh, I want to be a musician, like I want that to be my career thing, it's so easy just to like scoff at that and be like, oh, you think you're going to be famous? And and it's not like that's the only way to be a professional and successful musician, and to like make a genuine like good living as a musician is by being famous. And also a lot of people don't even have the desire to become like a famous, well-known musician. They just like want to play music. And so I think it's important to just remember that just chasing art, period, there's so many legitimate ways to pursue art that isn't necessarily to be famous. And just because people outside of your industry or your world of music or art maybe don't realize that, it, like, you know, it's not, it doesn't have to be, you know, to be famous to to, I don't know, make your dreams come true or whatever. So
definitely. It's a good reminder, it's one of those, it's like the invisible jobs in the
arts. Yes, and there's so many.
Yeah. They're like, oh yeah, that exists. But like, they don't think about it on a day-to-day basis. That happens a lot with graphic design. Because like,
sure,
no one thinks about that. But it's on every aspect of everything that you consume on a daily basis. And so when people are like, oh, what do you do? And I'm like, oh, I'm a graphic designer. And they're like, oh yeah, that exists.
Yes. Yeah. Or it's even just like the amount of invisible music jobs where it's like, there has to be people that makes the music for TV shows or like the podcast music things. Like there's so many just like little invisible jobs that are like, you can make it work no matter what you want to do.
I was even thinking of like orchestras for like live productions. There's people who will work for like a theater for 60 years, like playing an instrument, and they get to stay in the same place, have a steady income and a regular job.
Playing
and they
instrument.
Just play music for a living. Yeah. It's just like there's so many different ways I think that. And I know there's churches that hire like organists or pianists to play music every single Sunday. And that's like a regular thing.
It's very legitimate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. So I love shouting out the quote unquote invisible artists and musicians that are always behind the scenes, but are just as crucial as the stars. You know, I
agreed.
Yeah. It's, I think a lot of the times people would view like, oh, because their background or in the band, they're replaceable. But no. Don't know. No,
someone's
got
to do it.
Someone's has to do it and do it well, too.
Mm-hmm.
So before I talk about the individual women, I do want to talk about the documentary. So 20 Feet from Stardom came out in 2013, and it was by a documentary filmmaker, Morgan Neville. And it was produced by Gil Friesen, who's actually a music industry executive who really just had a curiosity to know more about background singers. And that's what inspired the making of this film. And it actually originally premiered at Sundance in 2013, which is fun.
Oh, cool.
Sundance is in Utah, so woohoo, home. And the film follows the behind-the-scenes experiences of backup singers, and it stars Darlene Love, Judith Hill, Mary Clayton, Lisa Fisher, Tata Vega, and Joe Lowry. Has a lot of others, and those are like the main six highlights to different extents. And it actually won an Academy Award for the Best Documentary Feature at the 86th Academy Awards, which is really cool. To start with this awesome quote from Lisa Fisher, who was one of the main six that they spotlighted about backup singing. And she said, "I reject the notion that the job you excel at is somehow not enough to aspire to, that there has to be something more. I love supporting other artists." She added, "Some people will do anything to be famous, and I just wanted to sing." And so I love how she like touched on the fact that it was like, it's not like she viewed her job as like a stepping stone to be famous. Like, she just genuinely wanted to do it. Like, she wasn't like she said, she's like, it's somehow not enough to aspire to. Like, no, it wasn't enough for her to say, "I want to be a background singer, because I think that's like a worthy career in of itself. And I love supporting other artists." And I thought that was really cool.
I love that, actually. Because, I feel like so many times people are looking at everything as like climbing the ladder, you know, like getting to the next step. And maybe you just love what you do and you just want to do what you love. You know?
Maybe that's enough. Where she's like, I just want to sing, and this provides me the perfect way to sing.
Yeah.
It checks all the boxes for her. Yeah. I just love that. Another cool thing is that 20 Feet from Stardom is also the 2015 Grammy Award for Best Music Film. And then what was cool is that all of those featured artists got a Grammy for it. So I just love that. That like all
That's
six of them
so
ended
cool.
up getting a Grammy. And some of them actually had Grammys previously. But because of their contributions to the music and the creation of this film, they got recognized with the Grammy. So love that. To provide some more context for the film, I found an interview with the director with some questions that I wanted to bring up before I talk about the individual women. It was actually just in a local magazine like the Aspen Daily, something like that, by Andrew Travers. So the first question is like how did this come to be? So the origin of it, and this is, by the way, in the words of the director. So this is who's doing the Q&A with. So Morgan Neville says, "The origin of it is Gil Friesen, who used to run A&M Records. He said, I think there's a film to be made about backup singers. And I said, that's interesting because I don't know anything about backup singers and I know a lot about music. We couldn't do research because there were no interviews or documentaries or anything to really go on other than meeting singers. So we spent 3 months interviewing 15 backup singers, then wrote up a treatment and said, there's definitely a film here. It was a journalistic enterprise in the beginning to see what this world looks like and then find the characters that best represent someone like Darlene Love. Not only is she a great character with a great voice, but her life has all the ups and downs that backup singers have, which I love the fact that they were like, we just couldn't do research for it. And I think that's something that me and you have run into a lot when we are finding things about just the women that we cover or the concepts we cover, where you can't necessarily always just easily Google it and have like three Wikipedia pages that you can just quickly easily reference as a dropping off point. Like, they didn't have that because no one really had asked this question, like, who were the backup singers? So they had to go straight to the source, which was the women themselves, which I think is really awesome.
Yeah, that's really cool.
The next question was, what surprised you in talking to rock stars like Jagger and Springsteen about their backup singers? He answered, it was very important that we were only interviewing so-called stars that had personal connections to one of our main characters. All of these kind of people said, quote, I don't know how much I have to say about this. Then they had a lot to say. It's just that nobody has ever asked them about backup singing. It's not that it's not rich, it's just unthought of. By its very nature, it's something that's in the background. That's what made those interviews so much fun. They were answering questions that they never answered. And when you're a rock star, that's novel. So
yeah, that's really like, cool.
I thought that was just so cool that it was like, no one thought that they would have enough to say, but then they realized it was just no one had ever asked these questions. No one had ever even thought to ask about the women backup singers that were in their bands. And when they finally did, they had so much to say about them, which
that's awesome.
Was really magical. And then this last question, which I think is my favorite one, which was, I never got the feeling from the film that these women were resentful over not getting rich and famous. And the director answered saying, in the beginning, I was surprised and maybe disappointed that there was no rage. Like, come on, you've got to be angry about this. What it made me realize, and that's what the film became about, was how can the people with talent who are in supposedly subservient role do it and not be bitter and prideful? That's part of what people respond to in this film. These women have incredible talent, but they're the opposite of egomaniacs. They're altruistic in a way. It's the opposite of what we normally celebrate in this culture, which is kind of what we touched on a little bit earlier, which was that, you know, the point of it for them, a lot of these women was never, I don't know, wasn't the resentful. And I'm sure they were like, oh, I bet we're going to find so much drama in all these women who hate the stars that they were in the background of. And then, yeah, I mean, it was the same thing when I was watching the movies. I didn't really feel like any of these women like hated the stars. I mean, some of them did some bad things, like where they didn't give certain women credit for things. And there were a couple people who did still pursue a solo career, but they weren't resentful towards the stars or the musicians that they were ever singing backup for, at least from what I could tell. So
yeah, there's something like kind of so pure about it, and not saying that like any other form isn't pure. It's just the fact that they're just doing it for the sake of like the love of it and not necessarily like the recognition or money that comes with like stardom per se. Like, I don't know. That's really beautiful.
No, I agree. And it's kind of like what you said earlier, where it's now a lot of people are always focused on like climbing the ladder and what they can do to get ahead. And that wasn't necessarily like the point. And I think that it was a really cool thing that he brought up the fact that it was like, we don't normally celebrate that in our culture. Like, normally it's the people who did like always put themselves ahead and like their goal was to be the very, very, very best and be number one all the time. But like, there's so much worth celebrating in people that don't necessarily want to be number one or want to be the very, very best. You know, they just like want to be talented and create art. Like, that's enough sometimes.
It is. I think a lot of the times we look at like rich, like money and fame as a way to have more freedom. But if you think about the freedom that comes with like a regular job, a regular paycheck, and like some excess time where there's no paparazzi outside your door.
Yeah.
Like, that sounds pretty great too.
Yeah, that's a great, that there's a lot of freedom in that. Yeah. And then like saw this TikTok just barely where like a guy, he's like new work wall in the new apartment. And it was like his, it was just like for Kroger. Like a bunch of pictures of like him at his job and like awards he'd gotten at his job. And like some of the people in the comments were like making fun of him for like caring so much about his job or whatever. But then other people were like, if you love what you do, like who cares what you're doing? Like, I don't know. It was a wholesome little vibe where it's like, there's like one side of it where it's like, oh, it sucks that, you know, we have to like live to work and work to live and whatnot. But it's like, you can be lucky enough to like find something you genuinely enjoy doing, like, yeah, take pride in that. Be happy about that. Like, that's amazing.
Seriously. Yeah. And like, don't be upset about the fact that that's what you like.
Yeah, like, exactly. Like, there's no shame if that's what you like your life is. Mm-hmm. You don't have to worry about how it's perceived by other people.
We don't always have to be reaching for something higher.
We're going to take a quick break just to spotlight one of our new favorite women artists.
So I actually have already shouted out this on our Instagram stories, but I just wanted to give them an additional shout out in the podcast, because I saw a New York Times article about a bookstore that opened up.
Yes. Excellent.
Yes. They now have two locations, one in Los Angeles and one in Brooklyn, New York. And it's called The Ripped Bodice. It's run by two sisters named Bee and Lay. And I love this whole thing. So obviously in the year of Barbie.
Mm-hmm. 2023, the year of Barbie. Yes. Yeah.
A lot of people have been finally focusing a little bit more on women's interests. And we have famously done a podcast episode on romance novels that was really eye-opening for us on how they continue to be the best-selling books of all time. And then we also did an episode on Book Talk, just like talking about how women are driving like the book industry forward, and print is more popular than it's ever been before.
Because of Book Talk. So, yeah.
Yes. So the fact that these two sisters are able to open these adorable, cute little pink bookstores completely dedicated to romance novels and like women reading books, and they have like the little displays that are like, we're in our era's era, and then they have like all the different books, you know, like, I just think it's so fun and so cool, and I'm so on board with it. And so if you're in those areas, like, I just wanted to shout them out and encourage everyone to go shop local.
I know, if you're gonna, I wish go, I could go
Book Talk books. I know. Same. It's so cute, too. Like, it is the most adorable little shop.
I absolutely loved. Yeah. When you sent me that account, I was like, oh, my gosh, this is everything I need and more.
I know. So, yeah, they're on Instagram at The Ripped Bodice. And then the name is just labeled as Bee and Lay, as the two sisters who run it. And they've been going since 2016 and just barely opened their Brooklyn store, I think, this week.
Yeah. Cool.
So.
I love it. Okay, so my artist this week is someone that I found on TikTok via a video of her drawing beautiful flower petals. Her account name is February Rose Designs, and her name is Michelle Beaudrat, I think. Mm-hmm. Exact same on Instagram, of just February Rose Designs. She does amazing and beautiful watercolor. A lot of it is like floral things. She's done designs with like letters. I love her TikTok because she does a lot of really awesome, almost like tutorials, but tutorials in the way that I was like, I literally could never, in the sense of like it's not like, oh, I will easily just follow those steps and it will look a lot like her, but it will show the process. But a lot of just like painting process videos, which I think are generally very beautiful, and I love it. So
these are,
you can
so
go
pretty.
Check it out. I know. She has commissions too. So
that's awesome. I love the letter ones.
I know. I was going to say, I absolutely love the letter ones, which they're like, obviously the letters with really beautiful, like floral bouquet type things behind it. And they are stunning. And just the most beautiful flowers. So again, that's February Rose Design.
All right. Now back to the show.
So now I'll go into the women. Like I said, some of them I'll go into a lot more, but then like the last couple, I just have a little paragraph just to kind of like shout out who they were and who they sang for, because all of these women like sang with the icons of the 60s through 80s, 90s. So it's pretty cool. But I wanted to shout out and start with the first person that I learned about, which was Mary Clayton. And she was born December 25th, actually, Christmas Day, in 1948, and is an American soul and gospel singer. And she contributed vocals to numerous tracks and worked with many major recording artists for decades, including, probably most famously, a duet with Mick Jagger on the Rolling Stones song Gimme Shelter. She was born in New Orleans, Louisiana, and because she was born on Christmas Day, That's actually why she was named Mary, because of the December 25th birthday. And it's spelled M-E-R-R-Y, not
That's
like...
That's cute.
Yeah, it's pretty cute. I didn't even like make that connection originally. And then I realized, it's like, oh my gosh, Christmas. Mm-hmm. And yeah, Mary is not spelled the traditional way here. It's spelled like Merry Christmas. So it's perfect. But yes, her voice can be heard as a backup singer on songs by Pearl Bailey, Phil Ox, Tom Jones, Joe Cocker, Linda Ronstadt, Carole King, Tori Amos, and on several tracks from Neil Young's debut album. She's often credited as having recorded with Elvis Presley, but her name does not appear in Elvis sessionographies, which is another just annoying thing that we see with background singers, where a lot of the time their work is very uncredited and not actually shouted out by name, which is so unfortunate because obviously they deserve the recognition for the work that they do. Her voice has been sampled in various songs, most notably Watch for the Hook by Cool Breeze, featuring Goody Mob and Outkast. But she actually began her recording career in 1962 at the age of 14, and she first sang Who Can I Count On as a duet with Bobby Darin on his album You're the Reason I'm Living. In 1963, she recorded the first released version of the Shoop song, It's in His Kiss. And then that was the same year that Betty Everett's version reached the top 10 on the Billboard Hot 100.
Song.
Yeah. So she was the first person to actually record it. Early in her career, she actually performed with Ray Charles as one of the Raylettes. At the time, Charles was the only artist her father would allow her to see at a live performance. And I think it was because like her family was very religious. And so like for some reason, Ray Charles was like the one that they made the exception for.
That's funny.
And she got to sing with them. Like I mentioned, she's best known for her 1969 duet with Mick Jagger on the Rolling Stones songs Gimme Shelter. A fun fact is on some releases, her name is misspelled as Mary, as in M-A-R-Y, not how she's spelled, which again is just, you know, shows evidence of the oversight of like, this doesn't matter. When like, if you listen to the song, like, she's a big part of it. But according to Jagger, the collaboration happened partially by chance. Jagger stated that the band thought it'd be great to have a woman come in and do the chorus. They called Clayton randomly in the middle of the night in L.A., and she showed up to the studio in curlers and contributed her parts in a few takes, which Jagger remarked was pretty amazing how she had done it. She actually performed her parts while pregnant and unfortunately very soon afterwards suffered a miscarriage, which is really sad. And she, though, was actually the band's second choice of the part. They had originally asked a singer named Bonnie Bramlett to sing on the song, but her husband actually refused to let her perform with the Stones. And so because of that, they ended up calling Mary. So thought that was interesting. And then in 1973, she was also featured prominently on Ringo Starr's Oh My My, which reached Billboard's top 10 the following year. And then she also sang backing vocals on Lynyrd Skynyrd's Sweet Home Alabama. The documentary like had a portion where she was talking about singing Sweet Home Alabama, where she like got a call and they asked if she would sing the song. She's a funny woman. And she was like, nobody's singing about Alabama. I don't want to sing about Alabama. Just like laughing at like the very notion that the song like this would exist.
Yeah.
Especially like as a Black woman. I think she was like, no, like Alabama hasn't been good to me. But she said something along the lines of like she was really young at that time. And I don't know if it was her boyfriend or her husband, but he was like, you don't understand. But like, I think it's important that like you be a part of this song and you'll understand when you're older or something like that, which in my opinion is condescending. I hope she didn't take it as such. But she ended up singing, you know, the background vocals of that song, which I'm sure she found it ironic. But hey. She did it, and maybe it is right, and I don't know, to theme that, you know, it's not widely known that she's the one who did the backup vocals on Sweet Home Alabama. So, I don't know.
I mean, as condescending as it was, it could have been important if she would have been credited and, like, that talked about. So, yeah.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
But also maybe it's just like a way of like taking your power back. I don't know. Of like, yeah, this is ironic and this sucks. And, you know, this doesn't seem right. But like, hey, you know, go take this and go sing it so that you know that like there is a Black woman singing on the song.
True. I mean, it is still probably one of the most well-known songs.
That's
even if it's like song. Memed.
Yeah, it is memed at this point, but it is one of the most well-known songs. So next time you hear that song, everybody, in jest, generally, it is now sung. But Mary Clayton, her voice is featured on that song, so I hope you think of her. Anyways, so there is just a very brief snapshot into the amazing Mary Clayton's life. The next person I want to talk about is Darlene Love. Darlene Love, unfortunately, has other examples of just not being credited for things. So she was actually born Darlene Wright, though she is known professionally as Darlene Love. She was born July 26, 1941, is an American singer and actually also an actress. She was the lead singer of the girl group The Blossoms, and she also recorded as a solo artist. The Blossoms as a group recorded a lot of major like background vocals for songs throughout the 60s and I think even the 50s. So
that's cool.
Anyways, like it's almost like the like, you know, when, like you imagine like a 60s songs with like the tight harmonies in the background done by the girls, like I won't say it's always the Blossoms, but I would say there's a really good chance it's the Blossoms.
I think of like
listening to
the Supremes.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or like
it's just a style choice at the time. It was very popular.
Hairspray with the like shoop, shoop. Shoot.
Yep. There was the Blossoms. So while still in high school in 1957, she sang with the Echoes, which is a mixed gender doo-wop group. And then she was then invited to join a little known group called the Blossoms. In 1962, the Blossoms were hired to sing on a session by producer Phil Spector. His girl group that was called the Crystals, they could not make it to LA in time for the session. So Darlene was paid $5,000 to sing lead on a song called He's a Rebel. And this was her first time actually on a Spector recording. But the single, which was credited to the Crystals, was released by Spector on his record label, I think. Get his version of the Gene Pitney song onto the market before like a different record label, I think, was going to release their version of the song. The Ghost released this song, came as a total surprise to the Crystals. So the Crystals are not here to blame because, by the way, like they were an experienced good girl group. Like it's not like they didn't have the talent. Like they very much could have done it in their own right. But
they couldn't get there.
They just couldn't get there in time to make sure that it was released first. But they were then required to perform and promote the new single on television and on tour as if it was their own. And the single actually ended up reaching number one on the Billboard Hot 100 in 1962.
That would be so frustrating for both of them because, like, they record it.
Yes.
And then they did. Like, that would be annoying.
So Phil Spector didn't just, like, take advantage of Darlene Love here. First off, it was all the girls that were in the Blossom. But then also, the Crystals, where I don't know if they were necessarily, like, lip-syncing it, or if they were just like sounded similar enough that when they were performing it live, they just like didn't worry about it. But they are not
sadly
the people singing the recorded version.
Yeah, sadly, they probably thought that no one would notice a difference. So it didn't
true. Matter. That is very
That's
true and not good. Yes. What's even, well, almost crazier. So following the release of He's a Rebel, Darlene Wright signed a deal with Spector, who actually then renamed her Darlene Love. And she recorded a song called He's Sure the Boy I Love. And she thought that it would be released under her name. But Spector, again, credited it to the Crystals.
Gosh. So we're canceling Phil Spector.
Yeah, he sucks. Cynthia Weil, who co-wrote the song with her husband, Barry Mann, was even unaware that Love had sung on the track. Quote, saying, "It all came out later. I think it was a terrible thing to do to her." And then Spector had Love sing Dadu Ron Ron in the studio, but he decided to record it with another singer at the last minute. So multiple instances where, I mean, the first two are horrible, where she's recording and then it ends up being the Crystals who are releasing it. And even the songwriter had no idea that this was happening. I mean, granted, I have thoughts on the fact that our songwriters actually ever included in the decisions about the song.
Probably not. Yeah.
So, but I guess it just shows that it's like, it's not like this was a conspiring thing. Like it really was just Phil Spector here calling the shots and he called it inappropriately and wrongly. And
that is sucks. So messed up.
Mm-hmm. Love recorded the track Christmas Baby Please Come Home for the 1963 holiday compilation album, A Christmas Gift for You from Phil Spector. The song was written by Jeff Barry and Ellie Greenwich along with Phil Spector with the intention of being sung by Ronnie Spector of the Ronettes. But according to Love, Ronnie Spector was not able to put as much emotion into the song as needed. Instead, Love was brought onto the studio to record the song, which became a large success over time, and it became her signature tune. So this time, thank goodness, she was actually credited as the singers.
Okay. And that is the song we hear on the radio, right? Is that the
one
by
I think
Darlene
that's
Love?
Like the... Okay. classic Christmas version of that song is Darlene Love's voice.
So that makes sense.
That provides
some
context.
That's probably why her name actually sounds like really familiar to me. And so it's probably from.
It's that Christmas song. Yep, for sure. But as a member of the Blossom, she contributed backing vocals behind many of the biggest hits of the 1960s, including the Ronettes' Be My Baby, Shelley Febre's Johnny Angel, Bobby Boris Pickett's Monster Mash. So, you know, the iconic background vocals,
that
the Monster Mash.
That is an iconic song.
That's the Blossoms. So there's some context for that. Frank Sinatra's version of That's Life and the Crystals' Duddy Ron Ron. The Blossoms recorded singles, usually with little success, though, on Capitol. So even though the Blossoms themselves didn't really have a breakout hit, they are featured on very, very iconic songs that are, you know, sung and known to this day, which is really cool.
Yeah, like seasonal songs that get played
every
single year.
A lot of seasonal songs, which I think is like a funny little like thing about like these 50s and 60s iconic songs, like with Sweet Home Alabama and the Monster Mash. Like, they're songs that have kind of more become memes, but in a way that's how they've like cemented themselves as being like culturally significant and iconic. And I think like that will last. So hey, maybe as a songwriter, the goal should be to have your song be a meme one day, because...
Yeah. Well, think of like Rick Astley, Never Gonna Give You Up.
Yeah, true.
He is rolling in those residuals regardless
forever of
how many people are laughing.
Yeah.
So yeah, so I think that's a good goal to aim for.
Uh-huh. The Blossoms as a group landed a weekly part on a show called Shindig, which was a top music show of the era. They also appeared on Johnny Rivers' hits, including Poor Side of Town, Baby, I Need Your Loving, and the track Some Tears. And another cool thing, and I mean, we did an episode about Elvis where we talked about the movie and also just the issues and the women behind Elvis.
Yes.
So here are some more women that are behind Elvis, where they were part of the Elvis Presley 68 comeback special, which aired on NBC. So again, like, they were obviously a big enough group that Elvis knew to call them, you know?
Yeah.
In the 1980s, she portrayed herself in the Tony Award-nominated jukebox musical Leader of the Pack, which featured the iconic rock and roll songs written by Ellie Greenwich, many of which were for a younger version of Darlene Love. And side note, I made a little note in my notes like, wait, what? Who's Ellie Greenwich or Greenwich? Because I think I'm doing a future episode on her. So
cool.
We love old pop songwriters. In 1986, her second chance came when she was asked to sing Christmas Baby, Please Come Home on David Letterman's Christmas show, which actually became a yearly tradition, which I think is really cool. And then she ended up singing background vocals for U2's remake of that song the following year. In 2008, she was ranked number 84 on Rolling Stone's 100 Greatest Singers of All Time list, which is cool. December 15th of 2010, it was announced that Love had been chosen for induction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Ooh. And yeah, in March 2011, she was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame with a speech by Bette Midler. And Bette Midler said, quote, "She changed my view of the world. Listening to those songs, you had to dance, you had to move, you had to keep looking for the rebel boy." Near tears, Love noted that she would turn 70 later that year and thanked Spector, quote, "for recognizing my talent and making me the main voice in his wall of sound." Her speech elicited a standing ovation, and later she sang Zippity-Doo-Dah with Springsteen providing a guitar solo. So, listen, in her induction speech, she did thank Phil Spector, but... but also...
he's still canceled.
Yeah, but also in the documentary, she also talked about the ways he screwed her over. So, you know what? Things can be true. Yep, you can have complicated emotions for people. You can be thankful for the good things they did and recognize the bad things that they did. And I personally am going to focus on the bad things he did. And say that the good things that she did were because of her own talent.
Yes, I agree.
So there's Darlene Love. From my perspective, Darlene Love maybe has had the most professional individual career out of the main six. But I don't even actually know if I can say that confidently, because they all pursued solo records and like got different levels of like acclaim and reached levels of success. So I don't even want to necessarily say that. But anyways, these next people, though, it's going to be just short little bits for the rest of them. But this next one is Judith Hall. Judith Glory Hall is an American singer-songwriter from LA, and she has provided backing vocals for such artists as Michael Jackson, Prince, and Josh Groban. In 2009, she was chosen as Jackson's duet partner for the song I Just Can't Stop Loving You during his This Is It concert But then, unfortunately, he had, of course, you know, passed away. So in 2009, she, along with the rest of the This Is It cast members, performed at Jackson's memorial service and attracted global attention when she sang the lead on the song Heal the World. Her debut album came out in 2015 called Back in Time, with Prince actually as the co-producer. So that story was a really cool one to hear them talk about, where it was kind of like she got this amazing role, like as like a main duet partner for the Michael Jackson tour. And then he, you know, very tragically dies. And so this opportunity is, you know, taken away from her. And then, though, during the memorial concert, she ended up like getting worldwide recognition of being like, people being like, who is this person singing this song? That's incredible. Which ended up leading to a lot more other amazing opportunities for her. So
that's awesome.
Cool when people get recognized for their incredible talents. Lisa Fisher is also, of course, an American singer and songwriter, and she found success actually with her 1991 debut album, So Intense, which produced a Grammy Award-winning hit single, How Can I Ease the Pain? But she was a very prominent backup singer for a number of famous artists, including Sting, Luther Vandross, and Tina Turner. And she actually toured with the Rolling Stones from 1989 to 2015. So that was a pretty consistent gig for her. Not to be confused with Mary Clayton, she actually did the recorded version, but then Lisa Fisher was one of their like main background singers that would tour with the Rolling Stones.
Gotcha.
So, but she was one of those people who just like talked about just like loving that gig and like just being so comfortable there and just being like, why would I not do this? Because I love it, you know? And again, it was just like a good reminder. Tata Vega is another one. She was born in Queens, New York, and raised between New York, Chicago, Texas, Panama, and Puerto Rico. So she's from all over. And she had an active career as a lead backing vocalist, working with Russ Taff, Stevie Wonder, Patti LaBelle, Michael Jackson, Ray Charles, Madonna, singing duets with Lou Rawls, Jermaine Jackson, Peter Rivera, Rare Earth, and Michael Cimbello. So a lot of iconic artists. But she's featured on the 2010 Elton John and Leon Russell CD, The Union. She also worked in film, performing the voice of Shug Avery in The Color Purple. And she's featured on 4 songs on the 1986 soundtrack album, one of which was nominated for an Academy Award in the Best Song category. So that's really amazing. And in 1985, she was nominated for the Best Soul Female Gospel Performance at the 27th Grammy Awards for her vocals on a song cover that she did for Oh, It Is Jesus. So again, you know, very iconic. And then the last person shouted out and featured is Jo Lowry, who is an Australian singer and musician. She actually released a debut album in 2008 called I Want to Be Happy. And then in 2009, she began working with Sting after winning an audition to tour with him. And she, I think that was her like main gig, was touring with Sting. And so, anyways.
Cool.
The last couple, obviously, very brief, but all of them are just incredibly talented women who have toured with some of the biggest acts and worked right alongside them and are all just amazing examples of love and devotion to their own artistry. And it was super inspiring to watch the documentary and just to like learn more about these women. So here is the starting point. I would encourage everyone to go watch that documentary if you have access to HBO. Because it was really good.
That's so cool.
And that's it. Those are the women of 20 feet from stardom.
I love hearing stories like this. I feel like it helps combat that like starving artist narrative or like egotistical artist narrative. And then also just like shine light on just things you never think about, you know, like think about the background singers and these tracks like the Monster Mash, you know what I mean? Yeah. And now, like, I know that every time I hear that, I'm going to think about these amazing women. Yeah, like that's really cool to me. And I think it changes like your perspective on history and everything. And it like sticks with you. And
totally,
that's what this whole podcast is about. So thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. And I think that's another thing they talked about in the documentary, where it's like the truth is like to pursue being a solo artist, like there is an incredible amount of ego that is necessary for it. And beyond that, like, sure, there is a lot of work that goes into it. And it's not necessarily like, oh, these women weren't willing to work for it. It's just that, you know what? Maybe certain people don't have the personality or the ego type, you know, style personality to pursue being a solo artist or to do all the insane things that are necessary. Kind of like the starving artist, like narrative, where it's like, you know what? Like maybe at a certain point, they weren't willing to give up the stability and the comfort and, you know, like the steady paychecks that these jobs provided them. And that's actually not something that should be shamed, you know?
No, like, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Mm-hmm. I think it takes a whole other level of courage to like be happy with your life the way that it is. I think that that's something that so many people are unable to do. Mm-hmm. And it's like a really cool thing
that
they were able to be happy just singing, you know? Mm-hmm.
Like, and that's and awesome. Like, they probably are the ones who actually have the cool stories, you know, like. I can't remember which one of the women who talked about it, but like she was totally like having an affair with one of the rock stars, but she was like, we had a lot of fun, like it was awesome. And like that's always like this, like I don't know, like that's like the life you want to live, you know, like the one where it's like you're going to be old one day, you're going to have amazing stories, and you had those amazing experiences doing what you love, and that's definitely singing and performing and having the way to do
that. Yeah,
so yeah, it was awesome to learn about that and be reminded of that, I think, especially.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thanks, everyone, for joining us. Mm-hmm. We have a topic episode next week that we've been preparing for a really long time. Mm-hmm. So come back for that. And then we get to move into September, which will just be more amazing things. We've got a great rest of the year planned, honestly. Like, I'm mm-hmm. really excited about all of our episodes. So keep coming back. Tell a friend. Me rate, too. Review. Follow us on Instagram.
And
all the things.
Yeah, we'll be back next week. Bye.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.